This is Audible.
HarperCollins presents Lily Bennett's Bucket List by Katherine Dyson. Read by Laura Bryden. Chapter 1. Lydia Gray had become so accustomed to bad dates that she didn't even flinch at the unexpected warmth of someone else's tongue in her mouth. The man smelt nice enough, fresh and masculine, and he kissed with a vigour which she was sure came from a place of passion, but something about the rhythm of his movement and the firm grip of his hand on her shoulder left her cold. His name was Matt, or maybe it was Mark, she wasn't sure. He'd introduced himself, of course, but Lydia had been so distracted that she'd only half heard him, because Matt or Mark had a strange quirk in one of his eyebrows, and from the very beginning, Lydia had not been able to take her eyes off it. The hair seemed to change direction somewhere in the middle, growing straight upwards right at the apex of the arch before falling back into a taper, as would be expected. It gave him a strange expression, one of perpetual intrigue, perhaps with an underlying note of something more sinister. And quite unfortunately, that one unruly eyebrow seemed to be the only thing about him in which Lydia had any interest at all. He'd talked almost solidly about himself for somewhere close to an hour, but Lydia had zoned out after a minute or two, making sure to nod at what felt like the appropriate times, and occasionally muttering, "Absolutely," followed by a small sound, something like "merp" or "mart," maybe. Something she hoped was vague enough to fall anywhere between Matt and Mark, as she'd forced her expression into a smile and tried to ignore the shrink of her shoulders away from the casual arm he'd wrapped about them. Lydia probably should have asked him to repeat his name when she didn't hear it the first time, but she hadn't. She'd been much too distracted by his jaunty eyebrow. And when he'd leaned in to kiss her a few minutes ago, that damn eyebrow was all she could think about. This was the way it always happened for Lydia. Every date, every man. They were fine, until they weren't. The slight curl of her lip away from her teeth almost imperceptible as she noticed things about them. Small things, usually. Small, sometimes tiny details which all added up to mean one crucial thing, that Matt or Mark was not the man Lydia really wanted to be kissing. He pulled away from her at that point, his eyes opening slowly as the hint of a smile pulled at his lips. "Wow," he said roughly. "What are you doing to me?" She couldn't begin to say. She wasn't sure she'd been doing anything at all. But she plastered a smile on a face that she hoped looked genuine and shrugged. He seemed to take her silence as contentment, and she forced herself to relax as he leaned back into her. She tried to go with the flow, tried to mentally will herself into feeling something, and when very little feeling arose in return, a small sigh escaped into Matt or Mark's open mouth before she could hold it back. His lips tightened then, into the whisper of a smile, and she felt his free hand move to the curve of her lips and tighten, his grip possessive in a way she wasn't sure she liked at all. Because Lydia Gray had already promised her life to a man, in the presence of God and both of their families, and she was not a woman who easily went back on a promise. She didn't like the word divorce, but she couldn't deny that it had become easier to say over the passing months. The first time had been like a knife twisting up into her gut. "So you want a divorce?" she'd gritted out, the swell of her tears cutting off the word before the final syllable. And all it had taken was a single nod to undo her completely. Adam Gray had been her first love, her soulmate, her best friend for more than half their lives, and with one small nod he'd burned 2 decades of their shared history to the ground. But that was a year and a half ago now, and though Lydia had promised their daughter that she would move on, There was no doubt in her mind that she was still absolutely and completely in love with her husband. Ex-husband. Ugh. Lydia had ugly cried in the departure lounge with her daughter only a few weeks previously, wiping tears from her cheeks with the cuff of her lamb's wool cardigan as she clung to her daughter with her spare arm. "It's only 6 months, Mum," Ollie had said, sliding her overstuffed rucksack to the ground as she wrapped lean arms tightly around Lydia. "I'll be back before you know it." And with that, Lydia's arms had tightened too. "I'll miss you all." "I know," Ollie's lips had tugged into a smile. "But do you know what would distract you?"
"Olivia, no."
"Come on, it's been over a year." She'd emphasised that last word as if a year were a long time. It had passed in a heartbeat. Lydia had taken a sharp breath in.
"I love him."
"I know," Ollie had said, pulling back from the embrace and setting both hands firmly on her mother's shoulders. "But he's moved on. You should too." Lydia's voice had strained through the stranglehold of her grief.
"I'm not ready."
"Try," Ollie had said simply. "For me?" Lydia had nodded her agreement, although in reality she couldn't think of a single thing worse than dating a man, any man at all, who wasn't Adam. And yet here she was, currently on a date with a man who definitely was not Adam. Matt or Mark pulled away then, planting one last kiss on her lips before dragging his up the side of her neck and whispering hoarsely into her ear,
"I'll be right back."
Lydia watched as he headed off down the small corridor that led to the toilets, the hitch of his swagger making his stride dip now and again. He was tall, maybe even taller than Adam, and the shirt he was wearing pulled here and there as it navigated the swell of a muscle. He definitely looked like a man who took care of himself. He would have been very appealing indeed, had it not been for that one quirky little eyebrow. She pulled her phone from her bag, hoping to see a message from her daughter as she unlocked the screen, even though she knew full well that it was the middle of the night where Ollie was now. She thought about escaping while she could. She'd done that on a date before, though she hadn't been particularly proud of herself. But she'd promised Ollie that she would try, and she'd meant it. And if she thought about it objectively, Matt or Mark wasn't the worst man she'd dated in the last few weeks. In fact, he was probably the best. Better than the first man, whose name Lydia hadn't even caught, so distracted had she been by his inexplicable scent of garlic sausage. Better than the second, who'd been Ollie's age, if that, and who had talked about cougars in a manner that had somehow been simultaneously childlike and predatory. The third hadn't even bothered to take his wedding ring off. He didn't deserve a place in the rankings. And all of them were infinitely better than John, the man she'd escaped from, who sent her overly emotional text messages on the hour every hour for 6 full days after their single, incredibly brief date. He'd had something about him, a strange vibe that had sent a chill down Lydia's spine, and she'd seized the first opportunity she could to get the hell out of there. In fact, Lydia thought, comparatively speaking, Matt or Mark was not that bad a prospect at all. Her mother might even like him. As much as Agatha Pearson ever liked anyone, of course. Lydia loved her parents, but she loved them much more when she didn't have to live with them. She was a woman within spitting distance of 40, with one failed marriage under her belt, and her mother never let her forget it. She shuddered, thinking back to her last birthday when Aga had hit the vodka hard and let slip her intricate plans to marry Lydia off to Andrzej, the unbearable son of one of Aga's old friends and, Lydia had once worked out, possibly her distant relative.
"If we are here on your 40th birthday," Aga had boomed, "and you don't have a half-decent man in your life, Andrzej will take you on a date."
Just like that, as if she had no choice in the matter, because even without taking the likelihood of their shared bloodline into account, Lydia very much did not want to go on a date with Andrzej. He made Garlic Sausage Man look good. Still, the threat of it loomed heavy over her dating life, and she was acutely aware that months had already passed since that day, and nothing much had changed since. She was still a single 39-year-old who lived with her parents. Not exactly a catch. She necked the rest of her wine in one and sighed to herself. Could someone in her position reasonably write off this not completely repellent man? She wasn't sure she could. As far as she could see, she had two choices. She could keep drinking until she felt attracted to Matt or Mark, or she could go home to her mother. She chose the first option. She ordered another glass of wine and had half finished it by the time Matt or Mark slid back into the seat next to her, one side of his mouth hitched into a cocky smirk. She smiled back, trying her absolute hardest not to overthink it. By the time she heard Matt or Mark's husky, "Let's get out of here," almost an hour later, Lydia was what she would describe as comfortably drunk and actually having a much better time. She found herself nodding almost enthusiastically at the proposition.
"I'll pay, babe,"
he muttered, and Lydia couldn't help the "ugh" which escaped her. But if he heard, he didn't seem to mind. He tapped his credit card to the reader, allowing a clear view of his name embossed in bold silver across it. Mr. Mark Dunn. Yes! Now she thought about it, he did seem more of a Mark than a Matt. And with that, Lydia downed the rest of her wine in one long gulp, and it gave her just enough of a buzz to look over at Mr. Mark Dunn and feel kind of aroused. What was she thinking before? He was a good-looking guy, and he smelt nice, and he paid for drinks, amongst possibly several other qualities that she was not currently able to identify. What more do I need? She wondered to herself, hopping off the bar stool with rather less dignity than when she had got on it. He's a good catch. And she smiled to herself as she followed him out into the night. Her mother was going to love him. Chapter 2. Lydia had rarely moved with such precision as she did in the half dozen steps it took her to get from Mark Dunn's bed to his bedroom door. She made the whole manoeuvre in one breath, fearing even the slightest exhale might wake him, and even when she was safely through the door, she made sure to breathe slowly and carefully, just in case. In fact, she didn't dare completely fill her lungs until she was a quarter of a mile down the road, trotting precariously on black patent heels which had seemed like such a good idea the previous night, but were now cutting into her swollen feet in all the wrong places. And speaking of places, she wasn't even completely sure where she was. It all came back to her in flashes, an increasingly blurry montage underscored by the light thumping in her temples. The bar, the taxi ride home, the press of unfamiliar fingers on her hips as they walked through the front door, Mark's perfectly adequate performance in bed, and then that bloody eyebrow staring her in the face as the glare of morning sun woke her up. She was being dramatic about the eyebrow, she realised that. In truth, she'd quite enjoyed her romp with Mark while it was happening, but she hadn't been able to stop imagining she was with Adam, not even for a moment. But Adam was gone, and Lydia was alone. Alone and lost on the streets of Leeds. She harumphed to herself and pulled out her phone, pleasantly surprised that her battery still had life in it. She opened her map app and waited until it had found her location, smiling with relief to find she was far enough out of her way that she was unlikely to accidentally run into Mark again, but close enough that one bus would take her home. She walked the few hundred yards to the stop and plopped down on the bench, sighing at the sudden relief for her feet. The bus timetable had been graffitied with the most realistic drawing of a penis she'd ever seen, but the column that Lydia was straining to see fell right in the centre of the shaft. She laughed out loud when she noticed. Every 15 minutes, perfect. The red notification tag on her dating app was the first thing she noticed when she pulled out her phone again, and she suddenly remembered ignoring it in the bar. She thought back to the look on Ollie's face at the airport. Just try, Mum, for me. Ugh. She swiped to open and was confronted with a picture of a man's crotch clad in the tightest gym shorts she had ever seen and the message back for no strings fun, followed by a winking face and an aubergine emoji. Lydia grimaced. She'd promised Ollie that she would try, and she was, but every message she got made her feel more and more disillusioned by the already very underwhelming world of internet dating. She blew out a long breath and was just about to slip her phone back into her bag when it rang, triggering the last remnants of her panic reflex and making her involuntarily fling the damn thing skyward. By some minor miracle, she caught it in two fingers mere seconds before it hit the ground, still muttering swear words as she swiped to answer.
Lids?
The voice on the other end exclaimed, completely ignoring the barrage of obscenity coming out of her mouth.
Where the bloody hell are you?
Anthony Zielinski had been born in the same ward of the same hospital as Lydia, only 23 days later, a fact he brought up often. Their mothers had been best friends as far back as either woman could remember, and so it was perhaps an inevitability that they would end up in each other's lives. Toshik to some, Tosh to most, he was Lydia's oldest and dearest friend, and a near constant pain in her arse, like right now.
I'm at a bus stop in Oakwood, actually, Lydia said, her hangover slipping a note of annoyance into the tone.
Tosh snorted.
I wasn't actually asking where you are. I was asking why you aren't here.
Where are you?
At your house.
Lydia's face crumpled in confusion. Why are you at my house?
Why aren't you at your house?
He clucked his tongue in disapproval, a habit he'd got from her mother. Lydia made a mental note to tease him about it later.
You've forgotten, haven't you?
Lydia's long breath out was almost a laugh. I think we've both realised by now that the answer to that is yes. I don't even know what it is that I've forgotten.
Your dad's birthday.
Shit, his 70th. She'd known about it, of course, and somewhere in her mind she vaguely registered Aga's voice telling her not to be back too late as she'd walked out of the door the previous night. Because of the party. Shit.
Don't panic, Tosh continued on the other end of the line. The party isn't actually starting until one, but Ags wanted me to make sure you weren't dead in a ditch somewhere.
Lydia huffed out a little laugh. Tosh was the only person on the planet that Agatha Pearson would allow to call her Ags.
Anyway, he said breezily, now I've found you, you can make it up to us by picking up a few bits for the party on your way.
Which us am I making it up to?
Lydia asked, one hand trying to rub the pounding out of her temple.
It's the royal us, actually,
he chuckled, and Lydia could clearly see his face in her mind at that moment. She could almost hear the smirk in his voice.
Just me. I had a bad night with the wee one and forgot my shopping list.
His tone turned apologetic.
Tried to wing it, but we both know how good I am at winging stuff.
Not good. His laugh was genuine that time.
Not good at all.
Ah, fine, Lydia blew out. Text me the bloody list.
You're an angel. I'll smooth things over with Ags.
I'm a grown woman, Lydia said, indignation creeping into her voice. I'm allowed to stay out past... But Tosh had already gone. Lydia sighed to herself and stretched her legs out in front of her, as if taking the weight off her feet might magically heal the rubbed raw parts. She pulled her pocket mirror out of her handbag, wincing when she took in her reflection, all smeared eyeliner and knotty brown hair. She'd always made a big effort to look good, and seeing herself like this in the harsh light of day made her stomach grip into a tight knot of shame. She wanted to cry, but she didn't. That wouldn't have done anything at all for the eyeliner situation. Instead, she found a tissue in the bottom of her bag, mercifully unused, and neatened herself up as best she could, pulling a set of false lashes from where they'd migrated to her hairline and sighing again, this time much more dramatically. She was too old for this. Her eyes found the stop for Sainsbury's on the bus timetable as she was rolling them, and Lydia decided on a whim that she would shop there rather than the murky haunt of a mini-market that she usually frequented. It would mean getting on another bus afterwards, but it was her dad's birthday after all. Not to mention that every extra minute she spent on her journey was a minute she wasn't being harassed by her mother. She still had her legs out in front of her when the bus pulled up to the stop, and the moment she finally put her feet back on the ground and stood up, the slice of leather on her toes made her want to cry again. And maybe she would have if it weren't for the growing queue eyeing her. There was zero chance she would allow herself to get emotional in front of other people. She pushed her tongue up against the roof of her mouth in the way Aga had taught her, staving off the shudder of tears, and plopped down onto the first free bus seat with a small squeak of relief that she couldn't have held in if she'd tried. The supermarket was mercifully quiet for a Saturday morning, and Lydia kept her head down as she made her way meticulously down the list that Tosh had sent, wondering as she went if he'd actually bought anything at all for this party. Even thinking the word party made her cringe. Her thumping temples had eased back into a milder but more general ache, gripping the top of her skull and the back of her neck. She couldn't think of anything she'd like to do less than spend her Saturday being interrogated by her nearest and dearest. But she pushed through it, buying sliced meat from the deli counter rather than the cheaper pre-packaged kind, and rooting through assorted packs of bagels to find the poppy seed ones that her father liked. Her dad would appreciate it. At least she assumed he would. Not least a hazard of being married to Aga. Steve Pearson had not spoken a full sentence in 20 years. Lydia had got as far as the pickles and preserves aisle when she heard a sound that made her blood run hot and cold all at once. It was a laugh, quiet at first, that grew in volume with each snicker until she could be in no doubt at all. Her husband was walking towards her. Ex-husband, ugh. She tried her best to focus all her attention on the two jars of gherkins she was considering, pulling her chin back so that her hair would obscure the view of her face. Traditional whole gherkins with dill and the small cocktail size variety which she secretly preferred but would never have dared admit as much to her mother.
"Mother nonsense," Aga had said on the matter once. "Why on earth would I want my ogorki to be smaller?"
Aga had been born in Yorkshire, but English wasn't her first language, and even now there were certain words she would refuse to translate. Lydia hadn't known the English word for gherkin until she was 7. But she was making up for it now, repeating the word over and over in her mind while she froze in place and waited for Adam to pass her by. Adam was a big believer in keeping up appearances. He couldn't see her like this. She was acutely aware of his proximity as he got closer and closer, and just at the point where he was so near that she could smell his aftershave, she took a deep breath, the familiar scent nipping at her eyes and making her stomach churn and tighten. And then, from nowhere, she'd heard a woman's voice reply to him, and her heart dropped like a stone. She'd heard that he'd been dating, Ollie had told her that much. But she hadn't wanted to believe it was true. Lydia couldn't concentrate on the words the woman was saying, just her bright tone and the smooth drawl of an accent. Spanish, perhaps? Something warm and sexy, anyway, with a quality that made Lydia want to see the person it came from, despite the pull of jealousy at her throat. Except, just as she thought about turning slightly to try and catch a glimpse of the woman, that accented voice spoke again, just two simple words, but two words that picked Lydia's stone heart from the ground and smashed it into a million pieces. "Okay, baby." And then Adam's reply,
"Thanks, baby."
Lydia's tongue went to the roof of her mouth again. Adam had never called her baby. Not once in the 20 years they'd been together. And it wasn't even something she'd missed. Not something she'd thought she wanted. But somehow hearing him say it to somebody else made her stomach flip with jealousy. The love of her life was calling another woman baby, and here she was, standing alone in the pickles and preserves aisle, trying as hard as she could not to cry. She held a jar in each hand, her eyes fixed on the curve of one of the lids as she heard Adam and his mystery woman pass directly behind her. She didn't move a muscle, holding her breath until she heard them go by. Except that didn't happen. Instead, their footsteps came to a complete stop, and then she heard him speak.
"Lids?"
She took the deepest breath she could manage before turning, her fingers tightening impossibly around the pickle jars as she did. But even then, when she met his eyes, it was all she could do not to drop them. His hair was cropped shorter than when they'd been together, and it made him look younger than he was. Younger and more handsome in a way that made her feel as if she couldn't breathe, as if her heart was physically trying to clamber out of her chest and into his. But he just smiled amiably, like they were casual acquaintances, as if he hadn't ripped her heart clean out of her chest right around a year and a half ago.
"Oh, hey, it is you."
His smile didn't seem to crinkle his eyes as much as it used to.
"I almost didn't recognise you in those shoes."
Lydia forced a laugh, but it came out so loudly, so awkwardly, that she immediately wanted to grab the sound and shove it back in. "Yeah, I was out last night, so..." She cringed, unable to finish her sentence, and absolutely mortified at the way she must have looked. She'd imagined accidentally running into Adam 100 times over the last couple of years, but she had always imagined that, when she did, she would look her absolute best. She had never considered that she might encounter him while she was on a full-scale walk of shame. She felt sick.
"God, sorry, I'm being so rude."
Adam smiled again and held up one hand, his fingers intertwined with the tanned, slender digits of the woman Lydia still couldn't bear to look at.
"This is my girlfriend, Aurora. Aurora, this..."
He emphasised the word heavily, as if the name itself were an explanation.
"Is Lydia."
"Girlfriend." The word hit Lydia in the stomach like a fist, knocking the wind clean out of her. She didn't say anything for what felt like a long time, and she didn't look up at the woman either, not at first. Not until she heard her speak, and then she couldn't look away.
"Lydia,"
that velvety voice said, drawing out the first syllable.
"I have heard very much about you. I am so happy to meet you."
And there was no other word Lydia could find to describe the woman she saw then, but stunning. Absolutely bloody stunning. She was young, but not awkwardly so, with glossy brown hair which fell forwards over one shoulder, almost to her waist, and legs that went on for miles. And worst of all, from the look of her, not a single scrap of makeup on.
"Nice to meet ye,"
Lydia muttered, trying her hardest to keep resentment out of her voice as she forced herself to smile at the vision of effortless beauty in front of her. Lydia felt like an ogre in comparison. But if Adam noticed her tone, he didn't react, and when he looked down at Aurora, it was with so much adoration in his eyes that it just about tore Lydia's heart in two. He looked different from the man she had known so well, something in his eyes or in his face which she couldn't quite place.
We're just picking up some snacks and supplies for a hike,
he beamed.
Aurora's taking me up Scarfell Pike tomorrow.
Lydia couldn't stop the huff of a laugh bursting out of her, but she covered it with a cough. Her husband, Adam, hadn't even liked climbing the stairs.
Aurora runs ultramarathons, so it'll be a walk in the park for her,
he continued, Lydia's interjection barely registering with him.
She's so adventurous, I sometimes struggle to keep up.
He laughed then, and Aurora giggled too. Lydia faked a laugh to join in, but inside she was screaming. Who was this man? He certainly wasn't the man she'd married. Had he leveled up somehow by leaving her? He'd said that the excitement had gone from their marriage, but she hadn't thought he meant that kind of excitement. Had he actually meant that she wasn't adventurous enough for him?
Anyway, we'd best dash.
His smile was genuine, without even a flicker of regret.
It was good to see you.
Lydia nodded, forcing down the churn of emotion in her chest.
Yeah, same. See you around. Nice to meet you, Lydia,
Aurora said with a dazzling smile. And then the two of them were off hand in hand down the preserves aisle and across into nuts and snacks. Lydia turned her attention back to the gherkins she was still holding, putting the cocktail-sized ones in her trolley and abandoning the others to the mess of the mid-morning shelves. She needed a win, and if that had to come from lying to her mother so she could eat her preferred style of small pickled cucumber, then so be it. Insecurity gnawed at her. She'd never considered herself a particularly boring person, but perhaps that was because she wasn't looking closely enough. She was cautious, that much was true, but that had never seemed to be a problem for Adam when they were together. Had he been thinking it the whole time and just never voiced it? The way he'd dragged out the word adventurous. Ugh, she'd never forget it. She swallowed past the lump in her throat and carried on picking up items from Tosh's list, half holding her breath in case she accidentally had her heart shattered again while comparing produce too casually. But the rest of the shop proceeded without incident, and by the time she reached the checkout, the tightness of her chest had eased down into a low hum behind her breastbone. Nothing more than the background longing that she had grown accustomed to since Adam had left. She was still thinking about the knot of Adam's fingers around another woman's hand as she loaded her items onto the checkout belt. But then, as she picked the bag of bagels out, she saw something right at the bottom of the trolley that she hadn't even noticed before she'd put them in. It was a folded sheet of light purple writing paper, the quality noticeably better than the scraps of envelope or lined paper that were usually left in trolleys, and there was a single line of writing visible at the opening of the fold, a single line that compelled Lydia to pick up the folded paper and slide it neatly into the front pocket of her handbag, a single line that read, Lily Bennett's Bucket List. Chapter 3
Lydka!
Aga crowed as Lydia pulled the Yale lock of her parents' front door closed behind her. She had thought she'd snuck in rather subtly, but when she dumped the two bags of shopping by the console table in the hall and looked up, her mother had suddenly appeared right there in the kitchen doorway, like an apparition. Agatha Pearson was a bold woman by any standards, short and compact, with a face that never failed to look furious no matter her actual emotion. She'd been born to Polish war refugees in a displaced persons camp in rural Yorkshire and would tell anyone who'd listen of her great struggles through the war years, despite not actually having been born until 1956. Nobody ever dared question her on it, though. Aga was not a woman who invited debate, and particularly not now, her pale green eyes narrowing as she looked Lydia up and down.
Your shoes!
Aga exclaimed as her eyes reached the bottom, clucking her tongue in that same way that Tosh had on the phone.
Those are not shoes for shopping, Mishko.
The term of endearment made her want to laugh, little mouse. Lydia only ever seemed to hear the phrase when she was being told off. She rolled her eyes as subtly as she could. Well, I wasn't intending to go shopping when I put them on.
Sorry,
she heard Tosh yell in reply from somewhere in the house. Aga glanced at the clock on the console table and bent to gather the bags of shopping. When she spoke again, her voice had softened a little.
We have almost an hour until your tata is back from golf. I'll sort the food out. You go tidy yourself up.
It was an order, as many things that came out of her mouth were, but Lydia had grown well used to the subtleties of Aga's commands over the years, and this one read like a gift. She smiled, kissing her mother lightly on the cheek before slipping her feet out of those torturous shoes and onto the blissful coolness of the tiled floor. Aga nodded a reply, the very side of her mouth hitching up a little, the nearest to a smile that she generally got, and her eyes tracked Lydia as she began to climb the stairs.
Everyone else is here.
Hi, everyone! Lydia shouted, and five voices shouted some variant of Hi, Lydia, back, making her smile, despite herself. Everyone consisted of Bajia, Aga's lifelong friend and Tosh's mother, Tosh and his wife Mila, and their tiny daughter Clara too, Lydia's paternal uncle Jeff, and Pan Majtek, an old man who lived alone five houses down and who Aga had invited round so often that over the years he'd just become part of the family. There had been a time when everyone was nearer 20 people, but numbers over the years had dwindled, lost to death, migration, and six-month trips around the world. Divorce. Still, now they were nine, and that, to Lydia, felt like a good number. A number that made her smile to herself at the chorus of replies as she carried on up to her bedroom. She'd been living with her parents for 11 months now, ever since the mortgage on the three-bed semi she'd shared with Adam had been too much for her to cope with on her measly salary. 11 months of living in her childhood bedroom, a room she'd once shared with her sister, Elena, and every time she'd opened the door in all of those months, she'd felt the weight of Elena's absence as keenly as the first night she spent in there alone. Elena had been barely 17, the sole passenger in the car her boyfriend was driving when, drunk on cheap vodka and bravado, he'd tried to race a friend along a dark stretch of dual carriageway and smashed his Vauxhall Nova into a wall. They'd both died on impact. That was 20 years ago now, and the room was exactly as it had been then, all cheap pine furniture and overly aggressive wallpaper choices. Just the same as it had been 6 months after that, when a 19-year-old Lydia, having found herself unexpectedly pregnant, left to move in with Adam. Since then, it had been preserved in its entirety, a shrine to grief and loss and bad decisions. Lydia sighed, flopping down on her aging single bed and throwing her shoes to the far corner of the room as she started peeling layers off. And with every item of clothing that came off, so too did some of her shame about how the last 18 hours had played out. And by the time she stepped in the shower, save for the quiet residual pain in her chest, which she was pretty sure was permanent at this point, she was feeling almost upbeat. It took about 25 seconds for Aga to completely strip away every last shred of that positivity.
Lydia,
she sing-songed as Lydia paddered back into the kitchen some 40 minutes later.
You didn't tell me anything about your date. Is he good prospect?
Lydia cringed. Aga continued oblivious.
You spent the night there, so I'm guessing he has at least some.
She paused, searching for the right word.
Talent.
Lydia wrinkled her nose.
Mama!
Or what?
Aga said, her face setting into an even sterner expression than usual.
Your old mama has been around long enough to know how the sausage is made.
Mama, no!
Lydia reared back in horror.
Where on earth have you heard that expression?
American television, Aga said without missing a beat.
Did I use it right?
She arranged the last slice of meat on the platter she was preparing and then turned, brandishing the jar of cocktail gherkins in one hand.
Mishko, why are these ogorki so small?
It was all they had, Lydia lied. Aga studied her daughter carefully for a moment before turning back, passing a bag to Lydia without even looking at her.
Here, you'll slice the bagels.
Lydia took the bag with a sigh.
Honestly, I'm not even sure what that expression means, but now all I can think about is you making sausage.
Pfft, don't change the subject.
Aga covered the platter and set it aside, her brow not moving from the frown it was set in.
I'm asking if this man could be my new son-in-law.
No.
Well, did you decide this before or after you got into bed with him?
Lydia paused for a moment to avoid accidentally slicing her fingers off in fury.
Actually, it was right around the time I realised that I never want to discuss my sex life with my mother, ever.
Aga's shrug was barely a movement, her posture defiant.
I'm just trying to make sure you don't spend eternity alone.
Thanks for the vote of confidence.
Oh, don't be like that. You know I worry about you.
Aga's green eyes flicked over to meet her daughter's.
You need to slice those quicker or you'll still be doing them on your tata's next birthday.
Lydia huffed, slicing the bagels just a little slower on purpose. You don't need to worry. I'm fine on my own.
But you are not on your own,
Aga exclaimed, waving her hand skywards as if God himself might come to her aid.
You are here with me and your tata all the time.
Lydia was just pondering whether it would be unreasonable to stab her mother with the bread knife she was holding when Tosh sauntered into the kitchen, baby Clara sound asleep in his arms. He looked over at the two women, that face which Lydia simultaneously loved and hated quirking into a smile. Lydia had never had a brother, and since losing Elena, Tosh was the nearest thing to a sibling that she had. Aga, too, almost considered Tosh to be her child, and not only that, but sometimes her favourite child. The older woman wiped her hands down her apron before gesturing to where he stood.
See, Toshik is married to a wonderful Polish girl. Let us help you find one.
Lydia rolled her eyes.
I don't want a wonderful Polish girl.
Aga didn't miss the belligerent tone in her daughter's voice.
Mishko, please. You know what I mean. Let us help you find someone in the community.
Her voice changed then, softening somewhat.
You know, Jeff and Pan Maitek have a spreadsheet.
Lydia paused, her knife frozen halfway through a bagel.
A spreadsheet?
Of prospects, Aga nodded. For you.
They don't.
Tosh laughed at that, gently so as not to disturb the sleeping infant in his arms.
They do. I actually think Pan Maitek might be on there.
Lydia's face drained.
Pan Maitek is 112,
Aga tuttered.
He's 86. He ticks all the boxes,
Tosh said with a shrug. Lydia huffed indignantly. She rather hoped Tosh was joking, but she'd known Uncle Jeff and Pan Maitek long enough to know that he probably wasn't.
What are the boxes, just out of interest?
Male, unmarried, alive,
Tosh said with another shrug, smaller this time.
Preferably.
Lydia shook her head in disbelief.
Who else is on there?
I think it's pretty much just Andrzej, Pan Maitek and Jakub from the Polish club.
My cousin, Jakub?
Oh, is he?
Tosh laughed lightly to himself.
Yeah, just Andrzej and Pan Maitek then.
Lydia took a deep breath and blew it out slowly. This is rock bottom. But rock bottom actually came a few hours later, as everyone sat around Aga's formica dining table, letting out their waistbands with satisfied sighs. They'd eaten and laughed and sung happy birthday and Stolat to Steve, who had even broke his silence long enough to mutter a few hurried thanks to everyone before climbing straight back up. Lydia had just mainlined 3 slices of Baja's signature poppy seed cake when it happened.
"Lids," Jeff suddenly exclaimed. "We didn't tell you."
She braced herself, looking between the 2 men beside her. "Tell me what?" Pan Mitek, to his credit, at least had the good grace to look sheepish. She knew the 2 would have been in cahoots.
"We signed you up for speed dating at the centre."
"The centre?" She almost didn't want to know.
"Bay Street. It's on a Friday sometime. I'll check the date for you. Starts at 7.
Lydia could feel the blood draining from her cheeks and rushing straight to her ears and her temples. "You signed me up for speed dating at an old people's home?"
"It's a day centre,"
Jeff said, adjusting his wire-framed glasses on his nose.
"And it's just at the centre. It's not for the members."
"No, I think it is for members,"
Pan Mitek said, the depth of his accent drawing out his words.
"But there are many good men there. Some are even younger than 70.
Lydia froze, the fingerful of cake crumbs she'd been gathering partway to her mouth, and she tried to keep her voice as calm as she could when she gritted out, "I'm 39.
"You might as well be 40, Aga said. "It will come before you know it. Then you will be 50, then 60, then 90, then dead."
"Wow, you really know how to lift a girl's spirits." Lydia's laugh had no humour to it. "Thanks, Mama." Aga shrugged, unrepentant.
"Well, it's true. You never know how much life you have left. Sometimes you need to try new things if you want anything to change."
Although she knew that there was truth in what her mother was saying, their combined meddling had made the thump in Lydia's head grow to such a level that she thought it might explode, and so she took the opportunity to excuse herself from the table. "As much as I would love to stay and discuss all the ways I'm failing as a woman," she said, smiling past the sharp tone in her voice, "I'm really not feeling too good. I'm going to have a lie down." "Shout down if you need anything," Mila said from next to her, lightly resting her hand on Lydia's forearm, and Lydia smiled gratefully in return as she moved to stand. Mila was sweet and beautiful and, in Lydia's personal opinion, much, much too good for Tosh. It was mercifully cool and dark in Lydia's room when she got there, and she flicked on the bedside lamp so she had just enough light to see. She had paracetamol in her bag, she remembered, and it was as she was rooting around for it that her fingers found the folded square of purple paper. She unfolded it with great care, smoothing it out against the carpet before moving over to her bed so she could see more clearly. The list had been written in meticulous cursive with a metallic grey pen, the eye of Lily dotted with a heart shape. She moved it under the lamp and started to read. Lily Bennett's bucket list. 1. Ride a horse. 2. Jump off the 10-metre diving board. 3. Climb a mountain. 4. Go camping. 5. Ride a roller coaster. 6. Learn to surf. 7. Go stargazing. 8. Get a tattoo. 9. Do the scariest thing you can think of. Lydia was transfixed. She read the whole thing 2 more times before folding it carefully, slipping it back into the same pocket of her bag and dry swallowing 2 paracetamol tablets with a grimace. Who was Lily Bennett? Lydia thought, a swell of curiosity in her chest. She must be someone who, like her, had not had much excitement in her life. Elena had always been the brave one, even when they were tiny, and after that same courage stole her away,
Lydia had taken even fewer risks until she was barely living at all. She was well aware that she hadn't done a single item on Lily's list, not one. She'd lived almost 4 decades of her life and never once gone camping, never even been on a roller coaster. It was no wonder Adam thought she wasn't exciting. It was because she wasn't. That had been her downfall. At least Lily had made a list. Lily wasn't like her. She might not have seen adventure before, but she'd made a plan. She wasn't standing still like Lydia. She was moving forwards, grabbing life with 2 hands and going after the things she wanted, the life she wanted. That thought stilled Lydia for a moment. Maybe she could make a list too. She was just about to grab some paper and start jotting down ideas when she was hit by a wave of panic. She'd been here before, making plans for her future, and all of those plans had amounted to exactly nothing. She had dared to dream in her youth just as Lily had, but all of those dreams had, ultimately, amounted to nothing at all. She blew a breath out, the sting of tears nipping at her eyes, but then, as she flopped down on her bed in defeat, she had another thought. There was a perfectly good bucket list already written. She was holding it in her hands right now. So it wasn't actually a list of her deepest, darkest desires, and yes, it was of course true that it actually didn't belong to her at all, but did that really matter so much? The important thing was making Adam realise that she could be the kind of adventurous woman he wanted, and any old list could do that. Not to mention that if it wasn't strictly her list, then perhaps she could lay the blame for any potential failures on Lily instead. If everything went wrong when she was living out someone else's dreams, then maybe it wouldn't hurt quite so much when it all burned to the ground. And that was the moment when Lydia Gray, curled up on her childhood bed at not quite 40 years old, decided on something. She was going to tick off every single item on Lily Bennett's bucket list. Ideas came to Lydia all in a rush, and she rummaged in her bag for her phone so she could look up information on surfing and mountain climbing and horse riding. Her heart skipped and sang, the small nagging voice in her head silenced for one blissful moment. She was going to do it. She was going to do all of it. Chapter 4 Arara De Luca, Ollie said emphatically the following morning, the instability of the connection making her image blur and jerk in the video chat window. I did tell you that Dad was dating. You didn't tell me that he was dating some kind of Spanish supermodel, Lydia muttered, the mere sound of the other woman's name making her feel smaller. Ollie didn't quite manage to hide her laugh. She's Italian. That's even worse. Aren't they a nation known for romance? A sudden memory of the way Aurora had said baby made Lydia's face quirk into a frown. Have you met her? No, but he tagged her on Instagram and I lightly stalked her feed. Ollie scraped her humidity-ravaged waves into a loose knot on top of her head. She had the exact same colour and texture of hair as Lydia, minus her mother's few errant greys, but on Ollie it looked casual and free and not at all like the wild and scruffy mop that Lydia religiously straightened. She must wear Dad out. She's very fit. And I mean fit, not the other kind of fit. Lydia huffed. She's the other kind of fit as well. Ollie shrugged. That's just how social media is. Everyone looks that good with a filter on. Well, I saw her in Sainsbury's lighting with no makeup on and she definitely looked like she belonged on the front page of some fancy magazine. Plus, it obviously didn't help that I looked like a complete goblin. Ollie couldn't hold the hoot of laughter in, but her expression softened. Mum, you never look like a goblin. I bet your mascara was just a bit smudged, wasn't it? I mean, even her name is beautiful and bright, Lydia continued, completely ignoring her daughter. I mean, Aurora, for God's sake. I'm literally grey. Bright versus dull.
I am also literally grey, before you start calling anyone dull.
Ollie raised a single eyebrow, pausing for emphasis before she continued.
Plus, you are beautiful and bright. You've just, I don't know, lost your spark. You need someone to relight it.
The edge of her mouth tipped up at that as her eyebrows wiggled suggestively and Lydia laughed, despite herself.
Ah, speaking of which, oh my God, please do not tell me that you found love and have completely failed to mention it until this far into the conversation,
Ollie said, the words tumbling out in a rush. Lydia rolled her eyes. No, don't be ridiculous. She shook her head at her daughter as the youngster practically bounced with excitement. It's much more interesting than a man. Just shush and let me tell you the story. And she did tell the story, from first finding the list in the trolley right through to the point where a mysterious list-writing character had given her a rush of quite uncharacteristic courage and made her want to do things that she would never have dreamed of doing in her life.
So, I asked myself, what would Lily Bennett do?
What would Lily Bennett do?
Ollie asked, her head cocking to one side like a dog.
She would be adventurous and brave, and she'd try all the things that she'd never had a chance to do before.
Right, so you're going to write a bucket list?
Well, no,
Lydia admitted with a shrug.
I'm going to do Lily's bucket list.
Ollie's face twisted with confusion.
But don't you hate a lot of the things on her list? I clearly remember you saying that you would rather die than go on a roller coaster.
Lydia huffed a laugh. Did I say that?
Yes,
Ollie nodded, leaning in closer to the camera.
Definitely.
I was probably joking.
You absolutely weren't.
Lydia's brows tugged into a frown. There was no point lying to Ollie. She didn't miss a thing. But was she quite brave enough to tell her daughter the whole truth? She wasn't entirely sure that she could.
Okay, maybe I wasn't then, but things are different now. I'm different now.
That at least was the truth.
And anyway, does it really matter who wrote the list of adventures so long as I'm actually adventuring?
Ollie's mouth opened as if she were about to speak, but she didn't say anything, just relaxed back into her seat, her expression softening.
A bucket list is a bucket list is a bucket list,
Lydia continued.
You think you're the first person to travel round the world?
Ollie laughed lightly.
I guess not.
So maybe the old me hated roller coasters, etc.
Lydia reached to smooth her hair.
But the new me is ready and willing to go on adventures.
At that, Ollie smiled broadly, her eyes widening.
Hey, you could ask Tosh to help. He's been trying to push your boundaries for years.
God, no,
Lydia repeated quickly, shuddering with dread at the idea. Tosh had absolutely no respect for her boundaries. He'd never stick to the script. He'd have her bloody skydiving or something. Ollie's face fell.
But I'm on the other side of the world. Who else would help? Babcha and Chocha Basya.
They both laughed at that. The mere thought of Aga on the back of a horse was almost too much.
I'll just go it alone, I guess, Lydia said with a shrug. I'm a grown woman, after all.
Ollie nodded in return, but she didn't look convinced. And then there was a low sound which Lydia couldn't make out before Ollie looked away for a few moments and then grimaced back at the camera.
Oh, hey, my time's up.
Lydia frowned. She always hated the goodbyes.
Are you in a web cafe?
Am I in a what?
Where you go to use the internet?
Lydia replied, her frown deepening. Ollie raised both eyebrows, clearly bewildered.
I'm just piggybacking someone's Wi-Fi,
Lydia shrugged.
Kind of the same.
Was it? She didn't even know.
Totally,
Ollie said with a slow nod and a warm smile.
Anyway, I gotta go, but I am so super proud of you, and I really hope you don't get lost up a mountain and this helps you find yourself again.
Don't get ahead of yourself, I'm just... But Ollie was already reaching to hang up the call.
Bye, Mum, love you.
Love you too, Lydia said quietly to the glare of her desktop screen, and as she closed the lid of her laptop, she could feel every single one of the 7,732 miles between her and her daughter. She thought about Ollie's words for the rest of that morning, and then again that afternoon as she lay on her bed. She'd feigned a migraine to escape a family game of Monopoly, which Pan Mitek and Uncle Jeff had dug out of the cupboard under the stairs while searching for an old set of tools Jeff swore blind were in there, but neither had managed to locate. She just couldn't face it, not in the mood she was in. Pan Mitek, in particular, was a terrible cheat. Hope you don't get lost up a mountain. Was she being reckless, assuming she could go this alone, considering that the most adventurous thing she'd ever done by herself was go to the Continental shop in a particularly sketchy part of town? Could she really pull off any of the adventures on the list alone? She wasn't at all sure. She snuck back into bed and was just Googling her chances of dying on a solo mountain climb when she noticed the message notification tag on her dating app. She almost didn't open it, expecting yet another crotch shot or creepy chat-up line. But overcome by a curiosity for which she was kicking herself, she swiped to open it. Thanks for updating your bio. Lydia's face fell into a frown. She hadn't updated it. It was just her luck, though, that someone would hack her account, and she clicked into her account info to survey the damage. Looking for adventure, it said, nothing at all like the very sensible blurb she had written for herself. I need a partner in crime to help me tick some things off my bucket list.